This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The 9/11 Commission was eagerly awaited for its examination of the events surrounding the attacks of September the 11th and for its recommendations to prevent further acts of terrorism. What was unexpected was that the 500-page government tome would be such a gripping read, in fact, a bestseller. When he was on Talk of the Nation in July, Commission member and former Senator Slade Gorton explained how the process worked.
When we saw the first draft, what is now Chapter 2 was Chapter 1. In other words, it proceeded entirely chronologically. And what is now Chapter 1 appeared rather close to the end. And unanimously, we decided that the drama of telling the story of the morning of 9/11 itself was so important that it ought to come first.
Yesterday, the report of the 9/11 Commission was selected as a finalist for the prestigious National Book Award in the category for nonfiction. If you've read the report, whether online or turning the pages, what do you think of it as a work of literature? Give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us to talk about the report is Sam Tannenhaus, editor of the New York Times Book Review. Good to have you on the program.
Oh, nice to be here.
What is it about the 9/11 report that has made it, in these people's judgment anyway, such a compelling read?
Well, it's narratively powerful. It tells the most important story and happened in America and that anyone can remember. And it's done with conciseness and with a narrative drive. There's a strong timeline. And in places it reads a little like one of Bob Woodward's narratives.
Give us an example of, first of all, do you think it is well-written, the prose itself?
Well, it's well-written in the sense that it's better than anything one would imagine would come out of a committee. And it has a kind of clarity and directness and immediacy that make it gripping, absolutely.
Well, reads better than most government reports is damning with faint praise.
Well, it's quite well written. Now, it's not a literary masterpiece, and I think there are questions to be asked about whether it seriously counts as literature at all, but it was not intended to be. And sometimes fine and important works are successful because they don't pretend to be something they're not. Clearly, the commission members, the staff who wrote it, had a clear sense of what they wanted to do. They sensed the efficacy of narrative as a way of describing the experiences that the country underwent and probing the important questions that underlie it. And they've done it with a kind of directness and forcefulness that we expect from good nonfiction.
Well, give us an example.
Well, let's look at the very opening lines. First of all, the chapter headings and subheadings are gripping. And this one begins, "We have some planes. Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, dawn temperate and nearly cloudless in the eastern United States. Millions of men and women readied themselves for work. Some made their way to the Twin Towers, the signature structures of the World Trade Center complex in New York City." There's a kind of implicit drama in that because the reader knows what's going to follow. And what the authors have done, which is what the best nonfiction writers do, is to weigh the reader's awareness of what the outcome will be with the uncertainty of the moment as it's revisited. This is the kind of thing you see in writing by Woodward or David Halberstam. It's a kind of reconstructive journalism.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very effective.
Well, the authors of the book, I guess, are listed as the members of the commission. Are they the ones who should get the credit for this?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's one a lot of us are looking into because we know there were also staff historians and writers, some of them very skilled, who seem to have put together the constituent parts of the narrative. And in fact, it's a question I think a lot of people would like to have answered. Who wrote what? How was it put together so seamlessly? How did it attain a uniformity of voice? You know, something interesting to keep in mind is that there have been other very major commission reports. The Warren Commission is the most famous. And what we forget is often they don't read all that well. Not many people have the narrative experience that readers have had with the 9/11 commission report. And, you know, I've seen people reading it on the train with fascination. People tell me they weep at certain parts. Somehow it recaptured an experience, and that's not something committee reports often do.
The Star Report was a bestseller.
Yes, it was.
For different reasons, perhaps. Anyway, let's get some callers involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255. Let's go to David, who's calling from Minneapolis.
Hi.
Hi.
I didn't think it was great literature, but I reviewed it for a journal, and I compared it to David Foster Wallace's Infinite Jest and also to Citizen Kane.
To Citizen Kane?
Yeah, because it's got all these shifting viewpoints, and it's told from all of these, you know, it's like this prism of different of different facets where you're looking at it from one point of view and then from another point of view, and it doesn't quite add up at the end. And so and Infinite Jest also uses a similar technique.
Hmm. Sam Tannenhaus, is that appropriate?
Well, that's a very interesting comparison. I think the notion that it doesn't add up is an important one. We ran a very lengthy essay on the commission report by Judge Richard Posner, who essentially agreed with the caller. He liked the narrative part of the report very much, had serious reservations about the recommendations. I think that's the place where it begins to feel more like a government document. The language is looser and laxer. There's an unwillingness to spell out exactly what might have been done, what should be done. It feels more like a group of people trying to agree about something rather than a team of writers who have a fixed narrative objective in mind.
So the prescriptive parts of the report are less convincing than the descriptive parts of the report.
Well, that's what our reviewer, Judge Posner, thought, and he's a very persuasive writer and a very lucid thinker. We've gotten quite a response to his essay, and I'm told commission members themselves have some disagreements. So we've run letters that come from people fairly close to the commission. But yes, it's not surprising. It's much easier to describe a catastrophe than it is to prescribe a solution to its never recurring. I think also Posner made an interesting point, and that is that it's impossible to predict a catastrophe before it's happened. And in retrospect, it's easy to see how it might have been prevented, but only because we know things we don't know until it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
there's
something?
A tendency to refight the last war rather than to look ahead to where the next one might be.
David, go ahead.
Yeah, what he's saying, there's a section at the end that there's a lot of information missing, but as a piece of reflection, I really like it. And there's a passage here that really reminds me of Proust, and it's just one sentence if I could read it.
Go ahead.
As time passes, more documents become available, and the bare facts of what happened become still clearer. Yet the picture of how those things happened becomes harder to reimagine as that past world, with its preoccupations and uncertainty, recedes and the remaining memories of it become colored by what happened and what was written about it later.
All right, Proust, okay.
Yeah, Andrew, that does sound like the reflections in the very last volume of Proust.
I realized after I said okay to ask David to read one Proustian sentence so we could be here for a while. David, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Sam, you were once yourself a National Book Award finalist in the same category, nonfiction, in that 1997, your biography of Whitaker Chambers. If at the time you had been up and the other nominees were all government reports, you probably would have felt pretty good about your chances.
No, not necessarily. We should remember, I think our paper reported it today, that this is not the first time this has happened. The Attica Prison Riot report also was nominated for the National Book Award. So I think there's also a sense here of the momentousness of the event. You know, we're living in a time when government seems to fail us at every turn, and who would have guessed that government would serve us in producing so elegant and persuasive a narrative about this event. It's not something that we would identify with the way our democracy is working at the moment. Mm. So there's a kind of surprise and gratification in that, I think.
Sam Tannenhaus, thanks very much for your time.
My pleasure.
Sam Tannenhaus, editor of the New York Times Book Review, and he spoke to us from his office in New York.